You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On a mixtape just around the corner, did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like song, and man, my song's gon' break through like...
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. It is always Up to Speed with Formula One. Today is Thursday, March 14th, 2023. Yes, it is Pi Day for all the math nerds out there, and that is Pi 3.14, not PIE, although... You know, a nice piece of apple pie does not go amiss around this house, or even pumpkin pie. Lots of pie. We're all pie fans around here. Anyways, it's late. I'm rambling. My name is Mark Daly, as I said, here to talk about not just pies, but also maybe a little bit of Formula One. And it is an off weekend, no Grand Prix until next weekend, until we go back to Albert Park in Melbourne, Australia for the Australian Grand Prix. Have our good friend Stuart Bell lined up to come and talk about that this time next week, and certainly looking forward to reconnecting with Stu and finding out everything we need to know for this year's Australian Grand Prix. Also, just got off the phone a little while ago with Mr. Mark Hamilton. That's the first time I had a chat with him in quite some time, and Mark says hello to everyone. He's doing well for everybody that's been wondering what's been going on with him, and everything's good. And we had a nice long chat, and it was good to sit down and kind of clear the air a little bit. There was a, you know, on both sides, I wish I'd said this, I wish I'd done that. The whole point is everything's good, and it was nice to talk to him. So who knows what'll happen in the future. You know, Mark did mention that he kind of burned himself out a little bit, needed a bit of a break, and, you know, he certainly... you know, it was a bit of an awkward conversation. The sense was, well, you know, you could always come back on and talk about Christian Horner and all that sort of fun stuff. So, you know, it was, you know, the rest of the conversation was good. The only awkwardness about it was talking about the whole Christian Horner thing, which of course isn't funny, of, you know, very serious, but very good to talk to and hope to get together with him soon and maybe see where things are going from here. Anyhow, let's jump right into the news. Do we have to, really? Because, you know, sit here, we've had, like, you know, 2 months of everything going on with Christian Horner. Anyways, earlier this week, Felipe Massa has now filed a lawsuit against the FIA FOM over the 2008 Singapore Grand Prix, the infamous Crashgate race where Nelson Piquet Jr. deliberately crashed to trigger a safety car, which helped his teammate Fernando Alonso. Yes, the very same Fernando Alonso who is now driving for Aston Martin. Anyways, Fernando went on to win that race. Hamilton, yes, that Lewis Hamilton, still driving currently for Mercedes, finished a second, and Massa failed to score any points after bad pit stop. And then he drove off out of the pits with a fuel hose still attached to the car, which is certainly no bueno, because that was a thing, you know, back in the day, back in those days where there was refueling in Formula One. Last year, Bernie Ecclestone, the former Supremo of Formula One, said that there was enough information available at the time for the case that, you know, for the Crashgate case to be investigated, and the result was thrown out. And then he backtracked on that and said that, you know, he didn't remember giving an interview or any such a statement. Anyways, there is a Brazilian law firm, and I'm not going to try and pronounce it because my Portuguese is not up to par. I don't want to, you know, butcher any names. Anyways, a statement from the Felipe's lawyer said, quote, Mr. Massa seeking declarations that the FIA breached its regulations by failing to promptly investigate Nelson Piquet Jr.'s crash at the 2008 Singapore Grand Prix, and that had it acted properly, Mr. Massa would have won the Drivers' Championship that year. Mr. Massa also seeks damages for the significant financial loss he has suffered due to the FIA's failure, in which Mr. Ecclestone and FOM were also complicit. End quote. So, You know, that that's basically it, right? Because if you go down to the end of that that year, that is, you know, the Brazilian Grand Prix is when Lewis Hamilton won his first world championship way back in the day. That was the first of seven. And, you know, Massa's season really did turn on that whole Crashgate scenario. And it really has been, you know... It's been disappointing to hear about this, right? I mean, there were a lot of suspicions at the time. And, you know, of course, Massa is going to be, you know, rightfully upset about it because he lost out on a world championship. Not only to have that record and have that accolade attached to his name for posterity, but also the amount of, you know, the future earnings. So his lawyers in the statement also wanted to say, quote, attempts to find an amicable resolution have been unsuccessful, leaving Mr. Massa with no choice but to initiate legal proceedings. So, you know, this has been going on for a little while. I mean, we talked about it on the podcast at least a year ago. But anyways, Felipe Massa is seeking compensation. He's basically, you know, suing them for anywhere between 60 to 150 million pounds. So that is a huge, huge amount of money. So this is an ongoing situation. This article I'm reading right now was written by Matt Q over motorsport.com, called Massa Files Lawsuit Against FIA FOM over 2008 F1 Singapore GP. So not really too much more additional detail in there. But, you know, Massa has certainly, you know, taken it a step further. So we'll certainly keep an eye on that one and see how this one develops. Jonathan Noble over at motorsport.com has, you know, dived a little bit more, you know, deeper into this story, into the lawsuit. And in an interview earlier this, or actually late last year, Bernardo Viana, who is a representative of Felipe's lawyers, told motorsport.com, quote, the objective is to bring the trophy home. It is not financial, end quote. So now this is a little bit different. I mean, you know, he's suing them for 60 to $150 million, pardon me, which is even more. And we'll have to see what happens. But anyways, it's a weird story. And also in that time, you know, a little bit afterwards, we had the Spygate scandal, which talked about briefly in the interview with Jonathan Clegg a couple of weeks ago from the Wall Street Journal, when we were talking about his book, Formula. And, you know, that whole story in and of itself is just absolutely bizarre, how, you know, somebody from McLaren, pardon me, his wife ended up at a copy shop outside of London with all the technical drawings on a CD-ROM from that year's Ferrari, and basically wanted them all printed out. I mean, it's just, it's something else. And I think it kind of goes together with what we've been seeing recently over the last couple months with this whole scandal involving Christian Horner, is that these sorts of things are nothing new in Formula One. Unfortunately, we've seen all sorts of things. I mean, at least when it comes to, you know, the whole Crashgate and the whole Spygate things, at least that had to do with the sport itself. Not that, you know, some forms of scandals are better than others. I mean, they're all kind of seedy and very distasteful in their own right. But at least it had to do something with the racing itself, and not all the allegations that have been levied against Christian Horner, which I don't really want to talk about too much more. So, you know, talking a little bit more, and this is not necessarily skullduggery or dishonesty, but it is a little bit of a gray area. And I'm talking about what happened last week at the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, when Kevin Magnussen was a bit of a mobile chicane. And it's interesting, too, because I've had quite a few you know, people reach out via email and tweets and things like that, or X's or posts, whatever you want to call it, over the past several days, and disagreeing to a certain point that, you know, with the take that I had with Kevin Magnussen. And that's fine. I mean, it's kind of gone back and forth quite a ways between, you know, the opinion. And I'd say it was basically split down the middle. Some people didn't mind what Kevin Magnussen did. Some people, you know, were, you know, it was either one way or another. I mean, I got couple of messages here from Christopher Hickson on X, and in which Chris says, have to disagree with your take on K-Mag's defensive play. Not sure how different it is than Leclerc at Abu Dhabi in 23, giving up P2 to Perez in an attempt to hold Russell back, or Perez earning himself the title of Minister of Defense in the 2021 season. The larger point being, where would you draw the line on when defensive play is good for the good of one's team is not sporting? The stewards could have forced him to give the position pat when he passed Tsunoda, rather than a second 10-second penalty. He played the hand that he was dealt. I think that's a very good point. I think especially when Christopher talks about Perez getting the title Minister of Defense in the 2021 season, in that finale at Abu Dhabi, before the whole incident with poor old Nick Latifi going into the wall, the safety car coming out, and then all the shenanigans around the restart and the unlapping of lapped cars, passing the safety car and all that. But that is a very good comparison. The only point being, I would say, is that I think the amount of laps that Perez had to earn that was slightly less than what Magnussen was doing. And K-Mag really didn't put open up the throttle as much as he could have. But fair enough. And I think it's enough of a gray area that everybody you're going to talk to will have, they'll be one way or the other, because there isn't one clear cut. I felt that Kevin Magnussen maybe could have used a little bit more of his throttle, could have been a little bit faster, but it's all perspective. And I think it's definitely a very, very interesting conversation to have. I mean, if you take, for example, some of the statements and some of the talk this week, Haas themselves actually say now that they feel that Magnussen could have let Tsunoda pass him in the race there. So, and as was pointed out, I mean, Magnussen got a pair of 10-second penalties, one for causing a collision when he collided with Alex Albon, and then later on he exceeded track limits and he didn't give the position back to Yuki Tsunoda from Racing Bulls or RB or whatever we're calling them, getting another 10-second penalty. Anyways, he kept, and depending what which camp you're in, he was either a mobile chicane or, he was doing a great job playing the team game, which I think you have to absolutely admit that that he did. I mean, his teammate Nico Hülkenberg wasn't burdened with the 20 seconds of penalties. He was doing a bit better in the race, and to get a single point for Haas is absolutely a huge deal. So I mean, from the point of view when it comes to maybe not so much team orders, but certainly teamwork, working together, that that they executed in the way that they did, because that single point might not seem like a lot, but to Haas it absolutely is, and that could make a big financial difference when you get down to the end of the year. So when it comes to Haas themselves, their new team principal, Ayo Komatsu, said, quote, Magnussen should have just given the place back. And I believe that the point of the race, if I remember the projection very well, we are fighting with Tsunoda for P10. Of course, we should have given the place back. We should have tried to overtake him. I believe with our pace, we could have done that. So I think the end results, we are still looking for P10. Whether we could have achieved it is another story, end quote. Anyways, Magnussen himself said, quote, I overtook Tsunoda, went outside to the track. So rules are rules. I'm not happy with myself to get those two penalties, but at least I was able to help the team create a gap for Nico to pit and to get a point. It's a tight battle between five teams at the back. From P6 down to 10th, it's a real championship, so every point matters, end quote. So there you go. That's that basically sums it up. That's that one point absolutely makes a huge difference for any one of those teams. Anyways, Alex Albon, who was involved in that whole train in that whole situation with Kevin Magnussen, he feels that this could be a doorway for other teams to or other drivers to do similar things. Albon was interviewed by Adam Cooper over at motorsport.com when he was asked about it. The contact that he had with Magnussen, and then he felt he felt he was a little bit upset and disappointed because he felt that it was not the harshest penalty for the exceeding track limits passed on Tsunoda. Anyways, Alex said to motorsport.com, quote, "I think it was fair and it happens, a bit of a squeeze. I don't like how that corner is shaped. It sticks out to you and I think it's very misleading. You've got to leave more space and then you realize because of how it sticks out at the end there, they could have just shaved it flat. I think it would be easier, no hard feelings. The other one was a bit cheeky, the other 10-second one with Yuki. I mean, you basically guarantee your teammate points for a 10-second penalty. Why wouldn't you do that everywhere? I don't think 5 to 10 seconds is correct. I think it needs to be you must return the position back and just leave it like that." End quote. Yeah, fair enough, right? It is interesting because, Alex, taking it, looking at it more strategic now because, other teams, other drivers will look at that and basically they're going to take, well, Haas is going to get that one world championship point. And basically all it cost them was a 10-second penalty to a driver that was outside of the points anyways. Nico Hülkenberg, who was the beneficiary of Kevin Magnussen's antics or teamwork, however you want to put it. Ayo Komatsu said, quote, "It's incredibly important. It's like gold dust. We've got five top teams, and then we're effectively competing for P10. One point, so with many other people, everything has to be perfect. So I'm happy for the team. Everyone's done their bit operationally as a race team. It was close to perfection," end quote. Yeah, so very interesting. I mean, Nico Hülkenberg, certainly getting the benefit of that, and Komatsu absolutely nails it. Gold dust for a single point, like Haas, is absolutely worth everything that it entails. So Hülkenberg himself, now I'm getting the quote from Nico Hülkenberg, said he'll absolutely return the favor for Kevin Magnussen should the roles would be. Be reversed. The Hulk said, quote, "At one point, I'm obviously happy about that. Great team effort, a great team game by Kevin. I was told that he really helps my case by holding up the pack behind him, which obviously helped open up the window for me to take the point. A very good job from him on that side, and thank you. I'll return the favor later in the season." End quote. Apparently he was also unaware that that Magnussen was helping him, and he was very surprised that the gap that he opened up between himself and the pack of cars behind Kevin Magnussen, his teammate behind him, and he actually thought that he was actually doing much better, having a much better race, that he was opening up quite a large gap from the rest of the pack. Anyway, he's going to take a quick break here. Going to come back on the flip side. Going to talk a little bit about Red Bull, because why not? Because we always seem to on the show. Anyways, time for a quick pause for a message from our sponsors. We'll be back in just a moment, so please don't go away. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome back to the show. And before we get into the next news item, pardon me, let's just take a quick look at the driver standing in the 2024 Formula One World Championship. On the driver's side, we have Max Verstappen from Red Bull with 51 points, Sergio Perez, also from Red Bull, with 36 points. Charles Leclerc from Ferrari with 28. George Russell, the Mercedes driver, has 18 points. Oscar Piastri from McLaren has 16. Then rounding out the top 10, we have Carlos Sainz, Fernando Alonso, Lando Norris, Lewis Hamilton, and then Oliver Bierman. Yes, the Ferrari rookie filling in for Carlos Sainz last weekend in Saudi Arabia scored 6 points in his Formula One debut. So if you're looking at the World Championship at the moment, and it looks a little bit strange to see three Ferrari drivers in the top 10 of the Drivers' Championship, that's the reason why. So very good for Oliver Bierman. That was certainly very, very exciting to watch. Okay, over on the drivers, well, pardon me, on the constructors' standing side, at the top we have Red Bull Racing with 87 points after two races, Ferrari with 49, McLaren with 28, Mercedes with 26, Aston Martin with 13 points, and then going down from there, we have Haas with a single point, and then Williams, Sauber, Racing Bulls, or whatever they call it, and Alpine all together have 0 points combined. So not a great start for those four teams. All right, let's talk now very briefly, hopefully, about Max Verstappen. Well, let's give him his due. Anyways, Red Bull said they'll not force Max Verstappen to stay at the team if he decides he wants to move on to another team to continue his career elsewhere. Now, of course, there have been a lot of things going around, a lot of quotes, and who knows if all of them are true, how accurate some of them are, all to do with Red Bull in recent times, especially with the whole scandal involving Christian Horner. Anyways, you know, it seems like there's been a real struggle internally with the team, you know, with, you know, at some points it was being suggested that Horner would be out, Marco would be out, everybody would be out, Nui would be leaving to go to Ferrari, etc. It's been very unclear as to what was happening. Anyways, in Saudi Arabia last weekend, Max Verstappen was basically saying that if Helmut Marko was to leave Red Bull, that he would have a big problem, and you know he could not guarantee whether or not he would want to stay with Red Bull in the long term. Anyways, Max said, quote, "I've always clearly indicated that Marco has to stay. I can't continue without him," end quote. So that is, you know, short but sweet. And, you know, seems almost a little bit like an ultimatum, right? I find it a little bit interesting too, and I can completely understand. I mean, if you know, you have a close working relationship with someone, and that person is key to what you do and whatever it might be, I can understand him like getting behind Marco and saying that, you know, him being here is absolutely one of the, you know, the big things. It has to happen, because if he's gone, then I'm gone, right? Anyhow, I do kind of find it interesting a little bit too, because, you know, Helmut Marko is in his 80s. And so, I mean, at some point he's going to have to stop. I mean, either he'll retire, which seems a little bit unlikely, and certainly hope that, you know, ill health or, you know, old age doesn't, you know, force his hand one way or another that way. That would certainly be a shame, because we don't want to see that happen to anyone. But, you know, Verstappen, obviously, very, you know, very clear that his success and what he does at Red Bull is in no small order due to you know, the influence and the support of Helmut Marko. So it was a pretty, you know, I think a pretty clear statement to the team and Formula One in general. And I mean, it's kind of, it's interesting, because a lot of things that have sort of these sort of spin-off unintended consequences, if you want to call them that, have really forced a lot of discussions. Max is under contract with Red Bull until 2028, but who knows? You know, Formula One contracts, we've talked about them a lot on the podcast in the past, aren't always the most, I don't know, what's the word you want to call it? I wouldn't say trustworthy, the most solid documents, because it seems like they can be torn up and rewritten or completely, you know, what's the word here? Thrown out, I guess, is the best word, if it suits everybody involved. But, you know, wouldn't that be the big story if Max Verstappen was to go off and join another team? I mean, I know that Mercedes is one that's been thrown out there, and Toto Wolff was saying to Steven last week that you know, he'd basically love to have Max Verstappen come and join the team. And let's not forget that Max was offered a job as a reserve driver with Red Bull back in 2016, 2015, thereabouts, when Max was just, still a teenager. And, you know, they played that hand very well. You know, Max went off to what was then Toro Rosso and went with all the uncertainty, and Danny Kvyat, you know, not delivering the goods, and was swapped out with Max Verstappen in early 2016. And the rest is really history, because Kvyat struggled at Red Bull in that car there, and it didn't work out. So they swapped him around with Max at Toro Rosso and partnered Max up with Danny Ricciardo, and the rest really is history. You know, Max gets into his first his first race with Red Bull at the Spanish Grand Prix, and Lewis Hamilton, Nico Rosberg take each other out at turn three on the opening lap, and then Max cruises to his very first race win, and it would be a sin that, you know, that was it. That was the first time there, the signal that that this guy is for real. And once he got that car, oh boy. But certainly, kind of going back to what we're saying there, that, you know, there was a history that that Toto had offered him a job in the past, and perhaps maybe that will eventually come to fruition. I mean, it's, we'll talk about Mercedes in a little while, but you know, it's weird, right? Because I almost kind of get the impression now that, what with Lewis leaving at the end of this year to join Ferrari next year, that this team, Mercedes that is, needs something. They need some life. They need some motivation. And we'll talk. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here, because I do have another story like that teed up. But, you know, what better way to replace a 7-time world champion than with a 3-time world champion in Max Verstappen? The only difference being is that that Max still has many, many more years to go in his career compared to, say, Lewis, who at the age of 38, going on 39, you know, you have to look facts in the face that perhaps maybe that Lewis only has a couple more years in him. And if Max was able to, you know, if he was to switch teams to Mercedes, and let's face it, I mean, that would rejuvenate and focus any team to get a driver like Max Verstappen in a competitive car, because, well, I mean, then we just kind of go from one year with Max dominating a Red Bull to potentially Max dominating in a Mercedes. So do we really want to go there? Who knows? It's a fun kind of thing to talk about. So there's another interesting story here written by Adam Cooper over motorsport.com. You should go check it out. It's called Why Aston Martin Could Beat Mercedes in F1 Race to Sign Verstappen. So this is a fun one to go and check out. You know, Adam goes through a whole bunch of different scenarios and thought into that. So I won't steal his thunder on that one, but wouldn't that be something? That would be the plot twist that that basically nobody saw coming. That, you know, you have Max going from Red Bull, which nobody would expect him to leave, and perhaps maybe going to Mercedes, who, like I said just now, they have a history, what with Toto offering him that reserve driver role almost a decade ago, and then looking for the heir to Lewis Hamilton to build the next Mercedes dynasty, only to perhaps maybe have Lawrence Stroll and Aston Martin, who have Mercedes engines in the back of their cars, come and steal Max Verstappen away. That would be interesting. And, you know, honestly, that would be almost a dream scenario in the sense, because we've had so many, you know, that this whole Christian Horner scandal has been a very unpleasant thing to deal with. It's you know, just nasty business all around, just the allegations and you know, everything that's kind of happened in that story. So this would be fun in the sense that finally it'd have something to do with Formula One itself, and maybe a bit of a spinoff of that that whole you know, Christian Horner investigation, that whole business. But, you know, at least it's would be a story about a driver changing teams. But who knows? I mean, could Aston Martin do it? I mean, Lawrence Stroll has been pretty adamant and pretty straightforward in saying, hey, you know, we're not here just to make up the numbers. We're here because we want to win races and we want to win championships. And he certainly put his money where his mouth is, because they've built a brand new headquarters, you know, a whole new factory, whole new facilities to become a world championship contender. And obviously, over the last couple of years, it's been more miss than hit. But certainly, last year in the first, definitely the first third of the season, it was looking really good for Aston Martin. I mean, we saw Fernando Alonso as a regular on the podium for many, many races. And it looked like this was going to be their season. And it was a lot of fun to watch because even though, you know, the Aston wasn't quite as quick as the Red Bull, they were quicker than everyone else. And they haven't been able to quite replicate that so far this year, but who knows what could happen in the future. Anyways, certainly go check that one out, why Aston Martin could beat Mercedes in F1 race to sign Verstappen, and you can find that at motorsports.com. All right, now let's talk about Ferrari. And team principal Fred Vasseur has said that Ollie Bearman, who stood in for Carlos Sainz, who was out with appendicitis last week and had to have an operation and missed the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Anyways, Bearman did a fantastic job bringing his car home in the points. And Vasseur said that despite the phenomenal outing by the 18-year-old Briton, it's not guaranteed that he will have a future seat with Ferrari. He won't automatically graduate into a race seat in the future. When he was asked about it, Fred Vasseur, who I have a completely different sort of view of now that he figured so prominently in the most recent season of Drive to Survive. He seems like a bit of a cheeky character. So I kind of almost imagine him in my mind, talking or saying these quotes. When he was asked about the possibility of Bearman getting a seat with Ferrari, Vasseur had to say, quote, "Don't start to speak about after Lewis Hamilton. Lewis is still not in the team. But it's a good signal for Ollie for sure. It's an important milestone in Melbourne and in Imola. He'll be back on the F2 project. And that is the most important challenge for Ollie will be this one. He will soon start the FP1 sessions with Haas. And this will be also important for us to give him experience and mileage in the car. But for this one, Jeddah, he already has the results in his pocket already. You have to consider Jeddah as a step, not the final target. He did well this weekend. He will have other challenges in front of him in the future with F2. He will do a couple of FP1s with us in Haas during the season. And all of you, including me, in 6 months' time, we won't speak anymore about Jeddah. We'll speak about Mexico, Brazil, and if he's doing well or not. And every day will be a new challenge. But for sure, he's keeping the same approach today. It will go well." End quote. So sticking with Ollie Bearman. So Haas says that he deserves a chance, but it's also not a given that Oliver Bearman will get a seat even with Haas in 2025. Ayao Komatsu, when he was asked about Bearman's performance in Jeddah last weekend, he replied, quote, "Amazing. The circuit is not the easiest circuit to jump to from in FP3. So I'm very happy for him. And he was impressive." End quote. And then when he was asked a little bit more about Bearman and his performance with Prema F2, and that he said the following, quote, "Of course, we ran him in Mexico FP1 and in Abu Dhabi, and straight away it was totally clear to me and to most of us that he is something special. It's not just the speed, it is the total package, and he understands the objectives. He handled himself very well, even during a run. He's able to sort of absorb the information from a previous lap and then make minor adjustments to make the next step better. He just showed maturity straight away as if he's been doing it for some years." End quote. So I guess the end of it all is that I think that Oliver Bearman is going to be one for the future. And if I can only imagine what it'd be like to be a racing driver, let alone an FP, or sorry, not FP1, but an 18-year-old driver that's going to have some outings again in a Formula One car, even if it's in free practice, knowing that perhaps there are great things to come in the future. Also, this is kind of a cool story. Apparently, Sebastian Vettel sent Ollie Bearman a good luck message before the Saudi Grand Prix last weekend. And he said that he got a lot of messages, but he got quite a few before the race. He said the best one came from Sebastian Vettel, who he's apparently a huge fan of since he was a young kid. And then he said up until Seb retired just a couple of years ago, he said he was always cheering for Sebastian Vettel. So he said it was very special to get a message from the four-time world champion. I miss Sebastian Vettel. I always kind of liked him in Formula One. It was just going back to the man that Ollie Bearman stood in for last weekend, Carlos Sainz. Ferrari team boss Fred Vasseur had an update and said that he's very optimistic that Sainz will be back next weekend in time for the Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne. So it looks like he's healing nicely. Anyways, Vasira had to say earlier this week, quote, this I don't know, honestly. The recovery so far is amazing. The fact that he was able to come today with us to be with the team is a very good sign and very good support for us. Now he'll fly back with me tomorrow and we will have 1 week of complete rest, and then we will take a decision on when he has to fly to Melbourne in 1 week's time, but I'm quite optimistic. So news that's coming around, but it sounds that he should be fit enough in time, and that would be quite the story if he does make it back for the Australian Grand Prix just 2 weeks after having a surgery for appendicitis. Okay, time for another quick break. I'm going to come back in a minute. I know I'm kind of rushing through it this evening, but there's a good rhythm to it. And as the clock ticks closer to midnight, I'm certainly feeling the need to get it done sooner rather than later, knowing that I've got still quite a bit of editing to do before I can, jump into bed and get to sleep for this evening. Anyways, enough of that. Time for a quick break. Back on the flip side, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Aston Martin, Mercedes, and a couple other things before we turn off the lights this evening. So bear with me for a quick message from our sponsors. We'll be back in just a moment.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back to the show. So a couple of stories left on the program this evening before we turn off the lights and call it a night here. But Fernando Alonso believes that they are at least 2 to 3 tenths off the pace compared to other teams like Mercedes and McLaren. And I think based on what we've seen in the past couple of races, the first two races for the season this year, that certainly is not an understatement or an overstatement. I think it's exactly the way that what we've seen. I mean, if you go back and take a look at the Saudi Arabian last weekend, Fernando Alonso, he did come home in P5, which is not too bad. He was about 3 seconds or so off Oscar Piastri, and then it was about 4.5 seconds thereabouts ahead of George Russell, who finished in P6. And then if you go back, a race before that, if you go back to Bahrain, then you look at what we had in the opening round of this year. You had, Max Verstappen winning, and you've got to go all the way down to P9. To find Fernando Alonso, and then P10 to find his teammate Lance Stroll. It was a double points finish, but they were well off the pace. I mean, Fernando, he was over a minute behind Max Verstappen, but he was still 20 seconds more or less behind Oscar Piastri, who finished in P8. This past weekend in Saudi Arabia, he was the only Aston Martin driver to finish because Lance Stroll, put it into the wall. And there's been some pretty funny, hilarious kind of videos going around with that quote from Lance Stroll, because if you saw the race itself, they did play some of the audio of the aftermath of the crash, and in which Lance's race engineer asked him if he could get the car going again and drive it back to the pits, in which Lance said, somewhat, he was irritated. You could tell just by the tone of his voice. He said, "No, I can't. I'm in the bleeping wall." So there's been lots of memes and kind of funny videos going around about that. Anyways, the point is for Fernando saying that despite, you know, the P5 this last weekend, they're still, you know, 2 to 3 tenths off compared to everyone else. Anyways, Fernando said that he felt that Jeddah was a step in the right direction, saying, quote, "I think it was better. We did introduce a new part on Friday that worked really well, and I think we made a step forward in terms of performance, but we still miss maybe 2 or 3 tenths compared to McLaren and Mercedes, and we will still keep chasing that kind of performance. It is challenging, but it's a nice challenge and an interesting season ahead. I'm happy with the result in front of both Mercedes and one McLaren and one Ferrari. It's the maximum I think we can wish at the moment. We saw again in the race that we miss 2 or 3 tenths compared to Mercedes and McLaren, and maybe a little bit more compared to Red Bull and Ferrari. While in qualifying, we seem pretty close. So yeah, we still need to keep working on the race pace." So there you go. That's Fernando Alonso. Now, talking about Toto Wolff, I was, you know, talked about this or alluded to it a little bit earlier in the show. And he says he has a new mindset over what he calls the Mercedes recovery. So, you know, let's talk about that now, because Toto had to say, quote, "I've changed my mindset. I don't think that additional pressure on all of us makes it better. I think we have a problem with the physics. It's not by lack of trying or by the mindset or motivation or energies. All of that is there, and I can see the buzz in the organization. As racers, when we have such disappointing results, you're feeling down. But when you're trying to change that with the right motivation for the week that comes, that's why we are believing that we can turn this around. We believe that our organization can dig ourselves out. I'm 100% sure that we can. We had so many unknowns in the last year where we started. We said, okay, this could be the reason, and this could also be a reason, and this could be a reason, and we fixed that. I can see from the sensors that what we have changed what we needed, but there's still this behavior of the car in a certain speed range where our sensors and simulations say this is where we should have the downforce, but we're not having it. The team has not been overconfident. We are probably the other way around. We see the glass is half empty always, and that attitude stays, but also that is the attitude to fix it. It is a different confidence to have that in the group this time around. At a certain stage, you're basically ticking all the boxes of the unknown, and where we are today, it is pretty clear where it points to. It's just my feeling that will come out on top. Is it good enough to beat a Max Verstappen and Red Bull? No, it is not, but at least we are bringing ourselves into a position for fighting for podiums and being right there. I'm 100% sure we are going to get there." End quote. So interesting that, you know, you have this team that has been so very, very successful in Mercedes and winning multiple drivers' championships and multiple World Constructors' championships. And, you know, they've struggled the last couple of years since we've gone into these new regs, into this cycle of regulations, and it hasn't quite worked out for them. You would just think that, you know, logically that they've had problems and they'll be able to figure it out and take it from there, and they'll bounce back pretty quickly, but they haven't, and it's taken a surprising amount of time for them to come back, because, you know, at the end of 2021, because of course this regulatory cycle was delayed a year because of the pandemic, so that didn't come until 22, and you know, we had this, you know, epic season of this epic battle between Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton in 2021. I know it didn't end in an ideal way in Abu Dhabi, but there were some good moments. There were also some tense moments. If you go to Silverstone, to Monza, some of the comings together that these two drivers had. But, you know, all in all, it was an exciting season. And especially after how things happened in Abu Dhabi, I think we are all looking forward to seeing a rematch between Max v. Lewis in 2022. And it never materialized. The Red Bull got better. The Mercedes wasn't as good and has struggled to close the gap with Red Bull over the past couple of years, and they're certainly better this year. I mean, they're certainly going in the right direction, but you know, they're still not quite there yet. I mean, if we go back and we take a look at the World Championship, if you look at the drivers again, you know, Max 51 points. You know, you have to go all the way down. Well, not all the way down, but George Russell is currently the highest placed Mercedes driver with 18 points in the World Championship compared to Max's 51. Lewis has only got 8 points from 2 races. He's all the way down in 9th, and that's going to be a situation to watch all season, because Lewis in his final year at Mercedes. But I think what's interesting about this, you know, this story is that And this quote from Toto Wolff is that, you know, despite all the success that they've had, and this is kind of like reading between the lines because he didn't say it's, you know, like out in the open, but, you know, based on that, that theory that, you know, they had a certain mentality, they did things in a certain way, and that brought them all that success starting in 2014 all the way up until fairly recent times, that, you know, they're in a different situation now, and it's not working quite the way that they're used to, and it might take a complete change, a different shift of mentality and focus in the way that they do things to get out of where they are now and get back to where they want to be, which is obviously at the front of the pack, leading races, winning races, and winning championships. So certainly a little bit of maybe not a little bit, but more work to do for Mercedes. Now, sticking with Mercedes, their technical director, James Allison, believes that F1's rulemakers, didn't quite get it right, and they made a mistake. And and what he said is like they basically obsessed over trying to control the wake of the airflow around the cars and the new ground effect regulations, which were the ones that came into effect, no pun intended, a couple of years ago in 2022. It was Allison to say, quote, "I don't necessarily think that they failed in those terms of one team dominating, because our job is to try and make sure we can make a good fight of it. But there are things in the regulations that don't serve any of us well. I don't think it's sensible to have cars that hug the ground in a way that these cars hug it. And the idea that you get good racing by controlling wakes while ignoring tires, the whole idea of controlling wakes being something of a tilting at windmills type of challenge, that side of things has been tested to destruction fairly evidently. But Red Bull are doing a good job and the rest of us have a duty to do a better job. I don't think that's the fault of the regulator." End quote. So he goes on to say, "I don't think there's anything wrong in particular with ground effect floors. But the particular layout of these ones that have a response to the rear ride height that is not particularly good for the cars, that isn't something that we should carry into 2026. Among the teams, that would be pragmatically accepted response. The FIA is still very much of a mind to place wake management at the top three of everything, sacrificing this stuff, and it'd be helpful if there's more balanced approach here." End quote. So there you go. Moving on to Racing Bulls, Danny Ricciardo says that the team has identified a few flaws with their car. Ricciardo, not the brightest, best race you ever had Australia. Ricciardo was only classified as 16th at the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix last weekend, and that is only a spot behind his teammate Yuki Tsunoda. You know, Ricciardo gets his name gets thrown out there quite regularly to be a replacement for Sergio Perez at Red Bull in 2025. Certainly, it didn't seem like his outing last weekend really bolstered his chances. I mean, he had a bit of an unforced error there in his spin later in the race. But then again, I mean, he was 16th. His teammate, Yuki Tsunoda, whose name has also been occasionally linked with that second Red Bull seat, currently occupied by Sergio Perez, he only finished 15th. So Ricciardo also, you know, in addition to the spin, had a 41-second pit stop with a problem fitting the rear tires on, as the team tried to double stack the both their cars during the safety car period, and then of course the spin later in the race. Anyways, Ricciardo said that the team has picked out the flaws with the cars, their current car, the V-Carbo 1, saying, quote, "Honestly, we found a few things over the course of the weekend. I think it was always going to be an uphill battle. We simply don't have everything functioning at 100%. So we see the flaws, honestly, with the car. The race itself, safety car, everyone pitted, and we had a really slow stop. Then we were in that train. So at the end, then just to make sure, I made my mistake as well. I had a spin at turn one. Honestly, some of the things with the car, like just when it comes to producing efficiency and everything, just a few things didn't quite add up. When it kind of plateaus, the other others keep improving. It's also a bit of a sign. So I could feel that was the limit of the car. We did find some things afterward, but you've got Parc Fermé regulations. And to be honest, even if we didn't have Parc Fermé, it's probably nothing we can fix in 24 hours. So I'm sure a few things will go back to the factory and come back with a fresh car in Melbourne." End quote. All right, final story of the evening tonight. So Esteban Ocon, the Alpine driver, says that racing their rivals at Saudi Arabia showed Alpine's weaknesses, So what is the weaknesses? The car sucks, you know, so, you know, to put it quite bluntly, and apologies for that, guys, but true. I mean, it's not the greatest car out there. If you go back and take a look last weekend at the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, let's take a look at the final race classification. So Pierre Gasly, he didn't even complete I think he retired on the first lap. He had a gearbox issue. So yeah, he was classified as a DNF after only one lap. And then if you go and take a look at the rest of the final race classification, Esteban Ocon, he was the last car, or first of the cars to be lapped. Anyways, everyone in front of him, starting with Kevin Magnussen in P12, was on the lead lap, even though they were miles behind. But Esteban Ocon in P13, not a great place to be. I mean, they said, he's in P13. His teammate Pierre Gasly in didn't even finish the race. And it's just, it looks really bad for them because they've had a lot of issues to start the year. And, we've seen a lot over the last couple of years with key senior personnel coming in and out. We've seen a couple of high-profile, people leave the organization, even just as recently as a couple of weeks ago. So they're certainly struggling, and it's evident in the car. Anyways, Esteban Ocon had to say, quote, "I think an opportunistic race, that's how we should call it. I think we were up to P10 at some point virtually because Kevin had the penalty. We navigated our way through and fought our way through, and there were a lot of battles, but in the end, it was just not enough. We were up to a point where we couldn't keep. Basically, we were faster than the car could do in the end, and we went backwards towards the end. So it's very clear that we need to improve for the next races now. Racing more with the other guys, it was easier to spot than in Bahrain. We're going to keep digging, keep pushing, and I'm going to be in the factory this week. So I'm going to keep pushing to find out solutions with the guys. In comparison to Bahrain, I think there are quite a few things that we spotted that we can improve, but there's a lot to improve still, and we are aware of it. There are some additional things said here by Esteban Ocon. Basically, the car isn't great. They got a lot of work to do. And, this is a frustrating team to watch. I mean, it's been Alpine for a couple of years. And then prior to that, it was Renault, the works team, when they took over from Lotus. And after, was it 2014, 2015, thereabouts, he came back onto the grid. And they just never really materialized and actually lived up to the expectations that they had. I mean, if you go back to a previous incarnation of Renault in the early 2000s, Fernando Alonso won back-to-back world championships in 2005 and 2006 with Renault. And they've always known how to build engines. I mean, they powered a lot of teams to world championships over the decades as well. And there's just not really a lot going well with that team in the moment. They've certainly been frustrating. I'm frustrated with them personally because for some bizarre reason, I decided to add those guys into my fantasy team and I'm suffering for it, unfortunately. So, of course, it's all about me. But, joking aside, this is a team that should do much, much better and has the potential to do much better. And they really haven't been able to do that over the past decade. And it's... it's a struggle, right? It certainly is a frustrating scenario to watch because we expect a lot more of them. Anyways, I'm going to leave it right there before we leave tonight. Just going to head on over and let's just do a quick update once again of our fantasy league. So at the top, we have Carrie Duro F1 with 482 points. Lehman's Racing Team with 476, moving up into second. Dropping down to third, we have the Red Beards with 465. Dropping down to fourth, we have Hamilton 8-time Champions with 463. Then moving up into places 5, 6, and 7, we have Super Karate Monkey Death Car in fifth. Then we have Sausage in sixth. And then the Misfits up into seventh. Holding steady at eighth, we have Austin JV, and then dropping down into ninth, we have a joint ninth place teams at the moment, Cranger and Tails I Win, both on 431 points. All right, there you go. Okay, going to leave it right there for now. Thank you all for joining in. It is getting quite late here. It's already after midnight as I get to the end of the show. Thank you all for joining me in this or joining in this week, and see what happens. See if there's enough to do a Sunday show this week. Might just wait a couple of days until I connect with our good friend Stu to talk all about the Australian Grand Prix. So maybe I'll just skip over Sunday night and do that with him on Monday or Tuesday, and maybe have a couple of shows in short succession to boot up the Australian Grand Prix, which we'll be talking about definitely this time next week. And before I go, just want to remind everyone, if you want to head on over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave a 5-star rating and review, we'd certainly appreciate that. Certainly helps grow the podcast and make it visible to others. And that's the easiest, quickest, and also the most inexpensive way to help the show. It only costs a few minutes of your precious, precious personal time. And thank you to one and all who have done that to support the show. Also, give me a follow on X at ScuderiaF1Pod. And you can also drop me a line at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. All right, that's it. That's a wrap. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. I hope wherever you are that the weather's good as we move into spring, which is now, what, like a week away or less? And I know here in beautiful Vancouver, Canada, it was a lovely early spring, late winter kind of day, or has been for the last couple of days. Cool, but not too cool. Nice and sunny with some clouds. Certainly a very, very pleasant weather for March as we slide into spring break here for the kids at school in a couple of days. And boy, I'm jealous. I could certainly do with a couple of weeks vacation, but it'll come soon enough. Summer is just around the corner, and I'll get my chance then to get some R&R. Anyways, that's it, folks. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Be good to each other. Be good. Be safe. Take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.